Welcome back to the Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA, reminding you support for WEAA is provided by Bosch, offering Bosch dishwashers at Bray and Scarf. As we jump into our conversation, let's start with what happened on this day, on August the 19th, and our day in history. And let's begin with Coco Chanel, who was born on this day in 1883. Those of you who like perfume, this was the day that she was born. She founded the Chanel Company. One of America's great poets who started a lineage here in Baltimore of children and grandchildren was born on this day, Ogden Nash, on this day, who said the kinds of things that that little quotes that stay with us, but you didn't even know they were his because we just don't think about them being his. Things like, candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker. happiness is having to scratch for every itch. Were little things he said. To keep your marriage brimming with love in the loving cup. Whenever you're wrong, admit it. Whenever you're right, shut up. So those were Ogden Nash's little quips. This is a day that Frank McCourt, the Irish-American author, was born in 1930. The great drummer Ginger Baker, born in 1939. Played with Cream, Blind Faith, Blues Incorporated, Atomic Rooster. Bill Clinton, very much in the news these days, not about much of anything, but in the news anyway, was born on this day in 1946, 42nd president. This is the day in 1948 Tipper Gore was born, and this is the day in 1969 Nate Dogg was born, rapper and actor. This is the day in 1970 that Fat Joe was born from Terror Squad and Digging in the Crates crew. Death on this day. Blind Willie McTell, 1959. Groucho Marx died in 1977. And this is a day, interesting enough, that in 1612, the Samlesbury witches, three women from Lancashire Village in England, were put on trial for witchcraft and burned at the stake. 1692, we had the Salem witch trials in Massachusetts. Five people, one woman and four men, were executed for practicing witchcraft. Women were burned to the stake all the time in America for practicing witchcraft. So we've always had a power of trouble. We've always had problems with the power of women, and we used to burn them to the stake. Now we just do other things, but times are changing. This is the day in 1862 that the war started with the Lakota and Minnesota. Well, if you don't know about this, during the Civil War, that the Abraham Lincoln's government waged war against Lakota in the North. Hanging 38 members of the Lakota Nation became a huge stain on America up in Fort Ridgely, Minnesota, and that took place in 1862. It was one of the wars to drive the Lakota out of Minnesota. This is a day in 1934 that the position of Führer was created by the German Electric with almost 90% of the popular vote, something we should think about. Just because things are popular doesn't always make them right. 10 years later, the Allies liberated Paris. This was the day that Ho Chi Minh in Vietnam in 1945 had the August Revolution after they threw out the Japanese and took Hanoi back. This was the day where the first African-American winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, Ralph Bunche, was named Undersecretary of the United Nations in 1954. We look at the sit-ins in 1960, but there were sit-ins that were created in 1958 in places like Oklahoma City, where young people from the NAACP and others forced the integration of a Katz drugstore chain in Oklahoma City. People were arrested. It was across the news back in the 50s, at least in the news in the African-American newspapers. This was a day that Desmond Tutu and many others defied apartheid laws and were literally whipped on the beach before going to a white-only beach in 1989. And this was also the day that in 2010, Operation Iraqi Freedom ends, at least officially, with the last combat teams leaving Iraq and going to Kuwait. But the chaos in Iraq continues unabated, as we've seen from the latest news, which we'll be talking about on another day. We are now going to jump into our national news. We have with us for our national news roundup today, Bob Summerby is in the studio, editor of the Daily Howler.
Good morning.
See you, Bob.
Good to be here.
Ann McCarthy is with us, dean of the Baltimore Business School. I mean, the Business School at Hamline University at Minneapolis. Put her back in Baltimore, but she's not here. Ann, good to have you with us.
Good morning, Mark.
And in just 2 minutes, we'll be joined by Shed Johnson, who is news director from our sister station, WVAS in Montgomery, Alabama, who will be joining us for our conversation there as well. We're going to cover all manner of things here on the course of the show. We're going to look at the U.S. government and deep cuts in our government, what they mean. We're going to look at Snowden and the latest revelations at NSA, what those things are telling us. We'll be talking about Bradley Manning later in the program, so we won't be doing that so much this hour. We'll be looking at American policy towards Egypt and much more. So please join us here, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Or you can log on to our Facebook pages, tweet us at Mark Steiner. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts. Let's cue up a little song here and start with this, because it struck me so deeply as I read the New York Times this morning. I'll tell you why in a minute.
Please come to Denver with the snowfall. We'll move up into the mountains so far that we can't be.
Please come to Denver. Please come to Denver. Now, why is that important? That song by Loggins so important here many years later after he wrote it? Because everybody's going to Denver. China's going to Denver. France is going to Denver. Britain's going to Denver. Russia's going to Denver. India's going to Denver. But guess who's not going to Denver? The United States of America can't get to Denver. It was a story.
It's uphill.
There was a story in this morning's New York Times that I have to share with everybody because we all read the Times. I have to read it because of the work we do here, so to bring stories to the airwaves. But there was a center story in the New York Times this morning that because of budget cuts, NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, had to cut travel. So this year, the National Space Foundation that puts on the major international conference on space – on space travel, on new technology, on potential cooperation, and more, is taking place in Denver. NASA had to cut that out of their budget. So NASA can't go to Denver. Everyone else is going to Denver, but NASA's not going
to
Denver.
That is really amazing. I mean, there it is. It's at the top of the front page of the New York Times. I haven't read it carefully yet, but, I mean, they can Skype it, I suppose. But now, really, that's just the kind of beautiful fact you just wait forever for, that Peru can get to Denver, but we can't get to Denver. Right. I think Denver is part of this country.
Somewhere in the middle of the nation, 1,500 miles from where we sit, from Washington, D.C. And we also, whether you agree or don't agree with what our policies are in Afghanistan, the Secretary of Defense was forced to cut his travel to Afghanistan from 5 trips to 2, where we have troops, people dying, Afghans dying, Americans dying, and fighting a war. And they had to cut the Secretary of Defense's trips down to 2 from 5 to go to Afghanistan.
It's really incredible. I mean, this, you know, the term banana republic is often thrown around and has been thrown around with respect to our recent budgetary.
Okay, wait a minute.
Yeah, go ahead. I just want to say
that the Secretary of Defense could get on a military transport and get to Afghanistan if he really needed to. Just because he's not flying business class or first class doesn't mean he can't get there.
Mark,
this
back
is,
to you.
I mean,
back, he's the one who's presenting these facts, and not me.
About nothing.
No. It was
government workers can't take expensive air travel to conferences. Big deal.
Well, actually, it is a bit. It is a big deal that when they said that the Secretary of Defense had to cut back his trips. They had to cut back.
I don't believe it.
It's right there in the paper. We read it this morning in the New York Times. It was verified by the Department of Defense. He had to cut back his trips because they had to figure out where to cut the budget.
I'm relying on Mark.
He's making the choice to cut back his trips. He can get there.
Is there not a level of absurdity when
transports going all the time to Afghanistan?
And don't they cost money because you have to put gas in them and fly them across the globe?
We send stuff to Afghanistan all the time.
What I'm saying is, isn't there a point of absurdity when we cannot even afford to allow employees of the United States government to take part in events that sometimes are critical jobs, sometimes not? And we just want to make light of it, as I'm making a little bit light, but this sequestration, because the government can't get its act together in the United States and is always stuck in Congress, it is literally starving out, as we talked about on Friday, people who live on Indian reservations across the United States of America, closing down food programs, closing down 80% of the police force on reservations and more, because America cannot get its act together to figure out how it's going to govern this country.
Now that is serious. But whether or not some worker can get from Dulles to Knoxville, Tennessee, for $1,600. What was he doing? His own private jet? This article is mostly frivolous, but I do believe, I agree with you, that there are some serious things that are being cut that are not making it to the attention, and something needs to be done about it.
Well, I'm just going to say, I have not had a chance to read the article, so I'm forced to rely on Mark's account of this article. But if NASA can't get to Denver for its own conference, I would say that's just a kind of a comical fact. You know, if that's the fact, that would be a comical.
Colorado Springs, and it is comical. I agree, but I don't think it's serious.
Well, I think it's serious it's a serious issue in terms of what. Where we are in the United States of America, that we cannot figure out how to put this country in order. This is just a kind of absurd commentary on where we are with it all. I think that, you know, we can't figure out, you know, I was listening this morning on NPR coming in here this morning, as I was switching back and forth between our station and a station in D.C. to just hear the news, when you have, you know, the National Public Radio and Corporation Public Broadcasting been cut back to the bone. The federal investment in public broadcasting is down by 10%, down almost to 10% of what public broadcasting gets. So now they have to rely on corporate America. So you have this major story they're doing on health care, and who's the partner? Kaiser Health.
Mm.
There are issues here. These are very serious issues being created in this country that are not, I think, can't be taken lightly.
And there's no question our capacity for solving problems, that's almost completely ground to a halt. And I think we've reached the point where entities on the left are part of this growing, what I see is a growing problem. I mean, I think this, myself as a liberal progressive, I think it started more on the right, but I think the liberal world is jumping in both feet first now and creating just total breakdowns that can't be resolved. And we have lost the ability to solve any problem except through enforced crisis and chaos, and that's just the fact of it. It seems.
Shad Johnson is now with us as well. He is news director at our sister station in Montgomery, Alabama.
Good
Alabama,
morning, Mark.
WVS. Shad, how are you?
I'm fine, sir. How are you?
Good. We just started off playing a little song about meet me in Denver, and I said America can't get to Denver because of budget cuts.
You know, there may be some truth to that statement, you know.
So good to have you with us, Shad.
Thank you.
So let me move ahead here, folks, and ask you all to please join us here at 410-319-8888. One of the things at the top of the news right now is the latest kind of leaks that have come out, the latest coming out from Snowden, that the Washington Post reported and other people reported that thousands of calls have been intercepted without being okayed by any kind of higher authority, even though we're also seeing that one of the FISA court judges saying they cannot they can't really make decisions there because they only have what the government says, nobody else, to kind of battle out the verification of what they need. But these latest revelations by NSA and more coming out by Snowden, it's got part of Congress in an uproar, but not all of it. And I'm curious what your takes are on all that.
Well, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Shad, please.
Well, I was just thinking that, you know, there must be a way to be able to safeguard the nation's borders from terrorist threats without having to troll through millions and millions of people's phone records. They seem to have an idea who they're watching, why they're watching them, but I just don't understand why you have to just throw the baby out with the bathwater, if you will.
Now, did the latest revelation, so-called revelation in the Post, did that come from Snowden or did that come from within NASA? Was that NASA?
It was pushed by Snowden, and the Washington Post went to NASA to get verification.
So that was NASA's reporting on its self-monitoring, is that?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And then the other part of the report was how the Obama White House then said you can't use the quotes from NASA. And then NASA, and actually, it's not NASA, NSA.
Uh-huh.
And then,
yeah, right.
And then NSA saying that Post saying we're going to use the quotes, then reneging on we're using the quotes. Anne?
No, this is just getting more bizarre as days go on, isn't it? I mean, then they detained this journalist partner in Britain for 17 hours or something like that?
Glenn Greenwald's partner, who he lives with in Brazil, was detained for 9 hours by the British at the airport.
Well, I think if the Bolivian president's plane can be down, so can Glenn Greenwald's partner. I'm sorry. Just going to have to live with this new status that he's achieved. I know Glenn a little bit. I'm sort of kidding. But, it's this is a brand new story. I don't know exactly what happened.
Yeah, I was just thinking that I saw the same thing this morning while, anchoring the morning newscast. And I just think that that any journalist who has any sort of link or ties to the young man in Russia, they're just going to face this sort of detention, harassment, if you will, just because they have a connection to it.
410-319-8888, your thoughts. We're going to probe this NASA issue, NSA issue. I keep saying NASA. I'm so hung up on getting to Denver. The NSA issue. Please join us here, 410-319-8888. We're also going to be looking at a bunch of other stories, the Fort Hood trial that's taking place right now. And I think we can come back to this whole other question we joked about in the beginning, because, when people talk about the Republicans' existential crisis, I think it's more than Republicans are having an existential crisis in this country. And also we'll be looking at Egypt as well and what the U.S. response should be. 410-319-8888. Timothy in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes, Mark, can you hear me very well?
We can, very well.
Yes, good morning. Good morning to the gentleman. Mark, once again, man, you have a great program. And I just thank WEAA for just spotlighting it and you having your show. And thank you for your topics that you picked daily.
Thank you.
That being said, Mark, I do not share the pessimism that one or both of your guests is spewing. Here's what I know for sure. All right, I'm a 52-year-old man who have came up and been raised in a black family, Ernst Black. I watched my mom and them and my grandmother and them go to the Great Depression and still survive. I watched my mom and them go through, my mom, go through Jim Crowism, still survive. Here we are today having, talking now, to 2013, about not having enough money for our scientists, our smart and brightest, to go to Denver, Colorado. Why? Because good people set back and allow the right wing of that party to slam and shut everything down, and nobody was standing up. Go here, Obama, you handle them by yourself. Nobody was saying, hold up, wait a second here. This is going to have long repercussions here. Let's fight back right now. But no, everyone sat back quietly. And to hear your guests be so pessimistic and say that the liberals and the left is causing the issue, this is what he said now. He said they're causing it now. I'm like, hold up, maybe I'm dumb here. Maybe I'm stupid. But I could swear, if you start a fight and you start losing, you can't say, oh, the other person is overwhelming me. You know, you can't do that. So I am optimistic about our country, and I believe if liberals and folks on the right who have good conscience and good hearts who really want to come to that table, they can come to that table. How is it that Congress can go away for 50 days vacation, and I haven't had me a vacation in 4 years?
Timothy, let me let them respond. I hear you, all of what he was saying. Bob?
Yeah, well, I have to say, in Timothy's call, I don't hear a lot to be optimistic about, but I agree there are good people on the left and on the right who could get together and solve this. My concern about the growing liberal corporate media, I'm thinking of MSNBC, but not them alone, is that this growing corporate media, and it is corporate media on the left, allegedly, it too is growing, is making its money on aggressive division. And for progressives to succeed in this country, we have to find ways to reach across and find those good people that Timothy referred to, good people in the middle, good people on the right. There's all kinds of good people in the world. Many of them have misled for decades from forces on the right, in my view. I mean, to me, this current situation started, as I said, on the right decades ago. I'm just concerned that I see liberal corporate media coming in the same way as conservative corporate media has divided, tribal. I see liberal corporate media doing the same thing increasingly, more and more. And it's progressives can't, especially given the way our Congress works, you can't succeed. You can't get anything through the Senate unless you have some ability to reach across the aisle. Liberals and progressives alone can't do it. We have to find ways to build bridges to other people, the good people Timothy referred to, in the middle, on the right. And I think increasingly our corporate liberal entities are not trying to do that at all. Their whole focus is it goes in the other direction.
And?
Well, that to some extent is how they make their money, right?
Yes.
By being, you know, by having headlines that attract people's attention. But I would say this, you know, this sequestration was supposed to be, you know, just the worst possible outcome, right? And that's why they made it, right, when they had that gang of six, or I can't remember what they were called back then. And it's come, and yes, some people can't fly some places. More importantly, other things are not happening, that it's more critical. But the country has not stopped. We're kind of going along. The market's going up. Well, the market's a little, you know, up and down. But it's like it wasn't as god-awful as it was predicted to be. And I believe, and I don't know if this is true or not, Mark, if we could find this out.
What's that?
I bet the only budgets that were not sequestered were the senators and the representatives. And if their budgets had been sequestered, we'd be hearing a lot of more bipartisanship and how to solve this.
Which is important. Shed, your thoughts before we go to break.
Well, I just think that the bottom line is that when we have people who are basically refuse to compromise, whether they be on the right or the left, it's up to the voters to make changes.
Amen.
Well, sometimes it's hard to make change when you...
If you're being disinformed all the time,
well,
constantly by all kinds of people, which everyone is being.
Everyone's what?
Being disinformed,
yeah,
by all kinds of people in all
right
kinds of ways. And it, to me, this was a force coming from the right for decades. And what my point early was, it concerns me to see liberal corporate entities sort of increasingly adopting that same pose. I want to see liberal and progressives talking to regular people who aren't liberals and progressives and finding the points that we all share as citizens. Because, you know, we're all in the 99%. In my view.
That's the very thing they're afraid to do, is that, you know, an informed electorate is an electorate that they're definitely know that that can have an impact at the ballot box.
We're going to take a very brief break, come back, take a look at Egypt, take a look at Fort Hood and more, and the existential crisis that both Republicans and Democrats are having. 410-319-8888. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. I remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. We are here with Shed Johnson, who is news director of WVAS in Montgomery, Alabama. Ann McCarthy, Dean of the Business School at Hamline University in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Bob Summerby, editor of the Daily Howler. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com or log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. And Allison in Mount Washington, you're on the air.
Hi
Allison.
Hi, how are you?
Very well.
Wondering if Ann McCarthy just mentioned sequestering and the Senate. I'm just wondering, has the Senate passed a budget yet? That's their main responsibility since the first creation of the iPad. And I think she had a great point about them being sequestered to do the one job that are sent to Washington to do.
Right. I don't know. Shed, do you want to say, do you have or Bob? Or
I do not. I'm just listening to the question, and to my knowledge, other than the budget that they tried to pass back a few weeks ago, I don't think they've been much action on that since then.
No, they haven't passed the budget at all. They just continue to do continuing resolutions. I think they've passed the budget in like 5 years.
Something like that.
Yeah. maybe more.
And one of the things, before we go back to our next caller, and I want to move on to some other subjects.
Ridiculous.
It is absurd. One of the things that, Bob, you've been writing about a lot, just in terms of the budget in the United States. I don't want to get stuck on this for the rest of the show, but I think it's important to point out, you've been writing a lot about the $1.3 trillion we spend on health care that nobody wants to talk about.
The $1.3 trillion we get looted on health care. You know, our annual health care spending is like $2.7 trillion. This is something the New York Times, after years of ignorance, the New York Times has actually started doing a series on the massive overspending that characterizes American health care. And by massive overspending, I don't mean 10% more or 20% more. I'm talking about per person, Americans spend 2 to 3 times as much per person on health care per year as any other developed nation. And that is a level of overspending that could only be characterized as looting. It's all going off to various entities. This has been a fact for years, for decades. Everyone knows about it. Every major news organization has avoided it. Now the Times has done 3 huge front page reports on it, and literally not one person at any, except for Fresh Air on NPR, not one, and this has been over 2 months, not one, the author's name has not been mentioned anywhere else. MSNBC isn't going to talk about this. They don't talk about this sort of thing. They don't talk about corporate looting, which is what this is. And if our health care spending magically was like France's overnight, and France has an excellent health care system, if our health care spending overnight magically matched that of any other developed nation, the budget deficit would be gone because a lot of our health spending is done by the government. All kinds of other issues would be ameliorated or solved, and yet this is not discussed. And when the Times does it, they're doing it in such an obscurified way that I think the reports have been sort of silly, but no one's even going to discuss it. It's astonishing. It's been one of the biggest issues, one of the obvious signs of looting in our country for a very long time. It cannot, for whatever reason, it cannot be discussed by major news orgs. They will not discuss it. They're not going. Now the Times is discussing it, and everyone's ignoring it.
Ann?
I'm going to have to look this up and read it because I'm intrigued. I have no doubt that looting is going on and fraud is going on, but I didn't even know the Times was doing this.
I know. This is the thing. So in the last article, which was 2 Sundays ago, she described, and it's all built around human interest, of course, because we don't want to get to the big global numbers that show us that something horribly wrong is going. Yeah. She focused this time on joint replacement, and she focused on a guy who got a hip replacement. Apparently, according to her reporting, the device itself costs $350 to manufacture. It is billed as high as $30,000. This guy was going to be, he got a price from a friend. He was going to get billed for $13,000 for a $350 item. The entire operation was going to cost him $78,000 in the U.S. plus the surgeon's fees, which he didn't estimate. Instead, he went to Belgium, where the whole operation was done for $13,600. Everything. It was going to cost him $78,000 plus the surgeon in this country. And the device itself, for $350, he was going to be billed $13,000 because he had a friend who got him the list price. Now that is looting.
Now, Bob, I think you make a very good point there because I remember NBC sort of touched on it. Barely. But I think this stems basically for the long protracted, shall we say, gnashing of teeth over so-called Obamacare. You know, they realize that if they have an institutionalized system in place, then these corporate pharmaceutical companies, lots of medical groups won't be able to shall we say, reap the harvest under Obamacare as they as they're doing now.
Yeah. And one of the and you're in one of the states is shed where there is resistance to following the law of Obamacare.
Right? Our Governor Robert Bentley, has flat out stated that he wants no part of the Affordable Health Care Act. He's been roundly criticized for that, but he says he will not expand Medicaid, all under the guise that the state of Alabama cannot afford it, despite the fact that the Obama administration is throwing billions of dollars at this problem. He claims that Alabama will not participate. Now, there's speculation that since he announced his his campaign for re-election as a Republican. He has to, shall we say, take this position. And once the dust is settled from next year's election, there'll be a change of heart. We'll have to see.
Let me just say, the state of Alabama could afford it if we were not paying ludicrous, you know, 2 to 3 times as much as everyone else. But and in terms of Obamacare, in 2009, which was the year when we pretended to spend a year discussing health care, the big news organizations completely avoid, as Shed said, little tiny make-believe. make-believe reports by the NewsHour, by the Times. One little baby pretend report. They just won't go. For whatever reason, they will not go there.
I think, like I said, the pharmaceutical companies spend just tremendous amounts of money on these networks and touting their new drugs, new programs, whatever the case may be. And with the networks being owned by corporate entities, obviously they want that money.
Well, not just the pharmaceutical companies. Here, they did do a local series on how, you know, take hip replacements or knee replacements. You can go to one hospital and get one, you know, sort of estimate. You go to another hospital, you get another estimate, and it's more complicated in the sense that it depends on your insurance. You can take the same insurance and go to a different hospital and get a different estimate versus somebody else who has another kind of insurance at that same hospital. It's crazy. It's such a patchwork.
Kenny Loggins should come up with a new song, Please Come to Belgium, because that's clearly the place to go. At his age. He's older now.
He's older now. We'll all go to Belgium.
Please come to Brussels.
Please come to Brussels to get your hip replacement.
Or Canada.
Well, I mean, I think we're going to come back to healthcare for an entire hour soon and get Bob back here with some others to really kind of weigh on this, because it is a huge crisis in this country that we will not put our hands around. And we're right. The media will not cover it.
And it's a crisis of looting.
Yes. Look, before we go back to the phones, Russ and Robert, the next callers out, we're going to come to. You can talk about this. We just talked about it. It's fine. But I want to raise another subject, then we can come back to whatever you guys in the audience want to, you folks in the audience want to talk about, 410-319-8888. So Russ and Robert, hold on. We'll let you have your comments on whatever subject it is that we talked about earlier. So a couple of things. Before you, I know Ann has something she wants to talk about. We'll get to in a minute as well. It has to do with the wildfires out west and why we're spending money in certain places on the way to there as well. Let's go to Egypt for a moment. And talk about this government, our government's reaction to, we'll talk about the foreign policy implications in Egypt in the next hour, but let's talk about what our government's response is to what's happening in Egypt.
Disappointing.
Let's go around the room. Then I have a question for you all, but go ahead. You can start, Robert, then I'll let go to Ann and over to Bob.
The reason I say disappointing, it just seems like U.S. officials kind of want to have it both ways. You know, at the one hand, we urge these, how can I say, these dictatorships, these power hungry individuals to democratize their societies, fair vote. I just think that. In Egypt's case, with what's happened over the past several weeks, where people were just systematically gunned down, basically for demonstrating, I just don't understand how we can just sort of hedge our bets and say, okay, Egypt, we're going to withhold $1 billion plus aid for doing this and doing that, and at the same time, you know, still try to, like I said, defend what has happened with Egypt's generals.
And
I just think we don't know what to do, because we want to be on the good side of Egypt's generals. You know, the democracy is more than just a vote. I mean, it needs a court system, a judicial system, the rule of law, and none of the Arab countries have put in what we take for granted in this country, which is the fabric of democracy, which is more than just voting somebody into office. What if the Taliban were to be voted in Afghanistan and started a systematic terror of women, which they do, you know, they've done in the past? Would we be willing to support an elected government just because they were elected, even though that they were, you know, hurting their own citizens? It's very complex, I think, and I think President Obama and his staff just don't know what to do.
Yeah, I mean, I always assume in issues like this, there are no good choices. There are only a variety of bad choices, and I'm going to have to defer to Mark on this one because he explained to me before we came on the air why the United States government sort of doesn't want to just take the moral high ground with respect to Egypt. But there are always forces. You know, it's a type of situation where there's never going to be. There's always the simple cartoonish correct stance, but there are always tremendous forces in the world involved. Mark, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob.
I know you're supposed to be moderating, but...
But we were talking about this earlier. I think that there's things we don't cover, which we would talk about in the show a lot, which is that there are a lot of things at work here. One has to do with the fact that the United States wants to keep a balance. Israel's an ally of the United States, whether you agree with that proposition or not. The United States wants to keep the balance, and Egypt's military keeps that balance, A, for the West. B, there is a battle going on in the continent of Africa from the capitalists of the West, Western Europe, United States of America, and the Chinese, who have moved in since 2006 throughout China and throughout the African continent, investing in Sudan. They do more investing in Sudan with oil and other things now than does the United States or any other Western group. If the United States said, we're not going to give you any more money, Egypt, China would say, we don't care who you kill. We'll give you the money. And we'll invest in your oil, and we'll invest in your military, and we'll invest in everything that you need. That's a big reason why the United States is not backing away.
I think another reason, Mark, is the Suez Canal. There's the prospect of oil and gas prices spiking.
And all that, and so who's going to control that? And I think that's part of the other part is what we're seeing here in many ways also is this is going to be a precursor to what I think is coming war on the poor in the world. But what I mean by that is that the majority of half of Egypt's population is 14 and under, and they live in poverty. There's no hope. There's no jobs. The only hope they have is in the Muslim Brotherhood because it gives them food for the soul, so to speak. And people are going to follow it. So when you're killing all these folks of the Muslim Brotherhood, you're just mowing down poor people. That's what you're doing in the streets of Egypt. And you're also seeing that there's someone, Shahira Amin, who comes from the Christian community, is a journalist in Cairo, said to us the other day on the show, she said the danger here is that all the people she knows who are Christian, who are secular, who are moderate Muslims, who are on the left and liberals, are making a huge mistake by backing the coup because it's just going to mean a greater dictatorship by the army and everybody's going to be under control. This is a very dangerous situation. It's got so many parts. It's not a simple thing to kind of address with one easy...
Do you think that's the reason the Obama administration just couldn't bring themselves to say the word coup? I mean, I was stunned at that. I mean, here we have an elected president. The generals come in and say, oh, no, we can't abide by your policies, and basically remove him from office and put him in jail. It's a coup from all the definition of the word I understand.
And Morsi was driving the country down to ruin, but that's...
But isn't the problem that if you use the word coup, there's a statutory requirement about... So now you trigger a statutory requirement of funding, which you may not want to trigger, so...
Let's go to our phones and see what our listeners are thinking on this and other subjects. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Russ in East Baltimore. You're on the air.
Greetings, Mark.
Hi, Russ.
I wanted to get in on with the medical segment because
sure.
I think basically there are three things that need to be done or looked at strongly to really get our arm around the medical issue. One is we got to look at the cost of producing doctors in this country. Medical education is absurd these days. Two, I think we need to look at our delivery system in terms of all this competition with advertising, everybody having their own separate this machine, that machine.
Right.
Well, we could do that regionally. And three, the real key, I think, when we can look at a third of what we're spending on health care is in end-of-care life. We need to look at some palliative care as a situation, which is tough to do because families don't want their loved ones taken off machines and stuff like that. But we're going to have to develop the courage to do that, to look at that. The second issue is, I think, Mark, during about the late 40s, early 50s, they had a governor in Alabama called Big Jim Folsom. And this guy was a Republican, but a very conservative one, a moderate one, I should say. And he said that racism is a phony issue. is simply a ploy used by the rich and powerful to blind the less powerful and the weak to their own personal interests. And I want to suggest that it's not just racism that does that, but all these non-issues that we come up with, LGBT, the gay gender thing, women and men working for what, these issues are real in one sense, but they blind us to the real issues because, Mark, we found $1 trillion to blow up Iraq. We found another $1 trillion to go into Afghanistan. We bailed out the big boys for $1 trillion, which really didn't solve the problem because the only thing that's problem with the market today that the lady mentioned is the federal government, the Fed policy. When the money stops being printed, the market will go back to where it should be. So what I'm saying is if we cannot figure out our own interests in terms of how this country should be spending money to take care of America and Americans, as well as trying to help whoever, then we're going to continue to get this because we're going to divide ourselves along these red and blue lines that are totally meaningless at the end of the day as to how we as Americans take care of ourselves and administrate our government.
All right, Russell.
Thanks for the time, Mark.
Appreciate your call always. Let's go to another call and then come back to our guests at 410-319-8888. Robert, hold on. I'm going to come to you. I just want to get a caller who have not been on in a while. Mike, you're on the air.
Good morning, folks.
Welcome, Mike.
I think the last caller, as well as Mark, said a lot of what I got to say, but I'm going to talk anyway. Okay? this issue that the massacres in Egypt are they're a predictor of a wider global conflict between rich and poor. The majority of people on this planet are destitute, and they have to fight. And when we're trying to figure out what we should do about it, look at home and see the growing poor here. The rich rule the poor here. And if we don't acknowledge that, we're going to be on the wrong side of a global conflict that's going to determine the human future.
Thank you, Mike. Anne McCarthy, I'll let you jump back in.
Well, I'm going to jump back to the caller, previous caller about the health care. He had three really good suggestions, very, very astute observations about what's wrong with our health care, especially end of life is incredibly, the bulk of money is spent in a person's lifetime at the end of their life. And we do have to look at that. I know, personally, I know my dad had a lot of end of life extraordinary measures and expense, and all he really wanted to do was go home and die. You know, he knew it was the end, but doctors can't, you know, it's more than just having a DNR. It's having a life kind of will and saying what you will and will not do before you're in that situation. It's tough.
Yeah. You know, the only I agree with what the caller and Anne have said, but we aren't going to discuss any of these contributors to this problem until we note that the problem exists and the scale on which the problem exists and the scale on which money is disappearing in our health system. And that, all I'm saying is that's the thing that big news organizations, everyone, the data exists. Every, you know, the data are not hard to find. You know, we spend $8,000 per person. Finland spends $3,000 per person. We all talk about the Finnish miracle in education, which isn't much of a miracle. No one ever talks about the Finnish miracle in healthcare because you're not allowed to talk about that. And until we're allowed to talk about the gigantic amount of money that's disappearing, no one's going to ever talk about the item-by-item areas where it's disappearing.
410-319-8888. We'll come to our next call in a minute. Robert, we'll get your call. But, Ann, I want you to bring up what you kind of sent in, which you're thinking about these fires that are raging around the West right now, and your thoughts on that were really interesting. Would you posit that for us?
Well, because I'm in Minnesota and the fires are closer to me, and last year we had a terrible fire up north, it just seems to me that our wildfires are increasing, probably due somewhat to global climate change, and also a historic drought in the West. And we send these people, you know, our firefighters, into the worst possible situations. We're lucky more of them don't die. And yet we do this so that people can live in these they want to live in the beauty of the world, and they want to live at the edge of civilization, and we build roads for them. There's a tremendous amount of infrastructure that goes into allowing people to live wherever they want in the West, in whatever conditions. And then when things go bad, which are very predictable, then we spend a lot of money, including human life, which is even more important, to rescue them. And I think sooner or later we have to say, this is not something, these are not behaviors we want to subsidize. Let the market take care of this. Make people pay through insurance premiums or pay to build or pay to have permits so that they have to bear some of the cost of what we as taxpayers are bearing. Maybe they'll make better decisions because of it.
I've never heard that about forest fires. You often hear that about, coastal inhabitants.
Right.
You know,
people building want to build a giant house right on the ocean.
Right on the
dunes,
that
gets, yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
I mean, we do that across America, man, whether it's because it would mean something that might be an anathema to you, though, Anne, because it would, and I mean this really, I mean, all due respect, because some of the ideas you and I have talked about in the past, that it would mean the people have to make the decisions and the government not pay for it, and the government have to say, well, this is not a place you should build. In other words, there are millions of people living in the Arizona desert, and there's no reason for them living in the Arizona desert, sucking up the aquifer and creating these lawns that nobody needs in the desert, or people living in places where they do live. Most of these places, like where the fires are raging in Idaho now, are resorts for the extremely wealthy who have bought the land, had roads built, and decide they want to live there.
So and then they can
go ahead. I'm sorry, Ann.
That's where I think you. This is sort of my republicanism coming out. That's where you make those people pay even more. I mean, if that's the lifestyle they want to live, then they have to pay for it. It's not up to us as, you know, middle-class taxpayers to bail them out.
Any thoughts, Mr. Shedd, before we move on?
Well, I was just thinking about the caller who quoted Big Jim Folsom about how we have these side issues that basically distract people from real answers. And I thought that was just a right-on comment.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to Robert. You've been waiting a while. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Robert.
Because now I guess a number you've made some points that I want to make, but as Mike Brand said, I'm going to talk anyway, but I'm going to try to make it brief.
You only have like 5 minutes left in the segment.
So basically, this is what I'm thinking about. In the earlier part of the conversation, when I first called on, someone was talking about how, you know, nothing happened in government, you know, the polarization of the right, and now we're seeing the polarization of the so-called left, the liberal corporate media, the conservative corporate media. The interesting thing is the key word here is corporate. Notice that, right? Whether you're talking about the Democrats or the Republicans, and the question gets to be, do we have an alternative? Mike Brand said that what we're missing is the struggle between the haves and the have-nots. He's right. But one of the reasons we're missing it, and this connects with a point made by one of your speakers, is that both the liberal and the right-wing media are corporate. So, in other words, if the 1% controls the media, then you have this limitation on conversation. The next question, therefore, is how do we find an alternative? Right? How do we find an alternative? Basically, as far as I'm concerned, the Republicans and Democrats, Republicans are, you know, with respect to the 1%, Republicans are sort of like the wife and the Democrats are like the mistress. And that's about the only difference. But they're both tied to corporate strings. So now the question gets to be, do we have a political alternative? What can we do to break loose from the corporate hegemony over our political life, over our cultural life? The foreign policy. Why are we siding with people who are shooting down, as someone said, poor people in Egypt?
Robert, let's get some comments here from our closing comments from our panelists.
Yeah, well, this week on my website, I'm going to be talking about, I mean, when we talk about corporate liberal media, I'm increasingly just annoyed with MSNBC. And, you know, I am increasingly encouraging people to realize that the people on MSNBC are being paid large amounts of money. I don't understand MSNBC to have been created by a political player the way Fox was essentially created by a political player. But the easiest way to build an audience and to get people excited is to pander to tribal interests. And that's increasingly, in my view, what MSNBC does. In some of the ways the previous caller mentioned, Big Jim Folsom mentioned, race and gender are important parts of progressive politics, but they're not the only part of progressive politics. And that's pretty much all you're getting on MSNBC now. And it drives wedges in when it's stressed that way rather than reaches across lines.
And well, I wonder, with the MSNBC you mentioned, Bob, is if that's a... okay, Fox is taking the political discourse to the right side. Perhaps we need to take it to the other extreme to remain competitive. And that's and that's not what I got into journalism for.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that MS has increasingly patterned itself on Fox.
Exactly.
I'm sorry to say that.
Well,
but
it was their answer to Fox. They were trying to create an answer to bring money in.
Create an answer
work.
To Fox, yes.
And you were going to say what?
I was going to say, I think it'll be interesting to see how Al Jazeera USA may change, you know, how we see journalism in the United States.
It will be interesting.
They just bought Al Gore's channel.
Right.
Well, there's actually an article in the paper today about how they're going to do straight news, and we're not going to do personalities. We're not going to, you know, I think that's in the Times today, actually. I don't know if anyone's going to watch. They can
do the
news.
We'll see. I mean, there are people who are guests on the show who have been commentators for different media around the country, for smaller media around the country, more independent media.
You know, Mark,
that are actually going to be on Al Jazeera. You're going to say what, Shed? I'm sorry.
One quick thought. This is what I worry about public broadcasting, because we've become so dependent on corporate contributions now. Till I wonder if we're starting to fall into that trap.
Well, we said we started the show off. I don't know if you were here, Shed, when I said this, but if you look at the report I heard this morning on Morning Edition on another station, as I go back and forth to listen to our Baltimore blend and to hear the news, and that their medical, the health care story was brought to you in cooperation with Kaiser Health Radio.
Yes.
So how can you do an objective story about health care if you're partnering with Kaiser Permanente?
Yes.
You know, what is that?
Yes.
That's insane. I mean, and that's what's happened to public media, because the public dollars have been taken away. And unlike other countries where there's a public media that is really objective and does anything wants and puts stuff out there, we don't have that in this country anymore. It's all become, even public media has become corporatized.
Yes.
So we are out of time. So I guess I had the final thought for that. I didn't mean to do that. But anyway, I did it anyway. So I want to thank all of us for being here. Shed Johnson, news director at WVAS in Montgomery, Alabama. Great to have you with us, Shed, once again.
Thank you for having me.
Ann McCarthy, Dean of the Business School at Hamline University in Minneapolis, Minnesota, joining us from there. Ann, great to have you with us as well.
Thanks, Mark.
Always good to have you in the studio. Not in the studio, but at least with us, Dr. McCarthy.
Yes. In spirit and voice.
That's it.
And please come to Baltimore.
Please.
I'll see if I can get a flight.
Please come to Baltimore.
Yeah, come on. Let's all sing.
Bob Summerby, editor of the Daily Howler.
Thanks to Mark, Shedd, and Ann.
Good to have all four of you with us, three of you with us. Thank you so much. We're going to take a brief break. We're going to take a look at the Bradley Manning trial. The verdict will be coming in a couple of days. We're looking at it from a number of different angles today with our guests, and also then take a look at what's going on in the Middle East in a debate with people from very different perspectives. Stay with us. We'll be right back.